This is Regionally Speaking on Lakeshore Public Radio. I'm Chris Nolte.
Oh, from time to time, we have a chance to chat with Hammond Mayor Tom McDermott Jr. about what's happening in the city, which, of course, is Lake County's largest city. And it's nice to have the mayor with us today. Thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for the invite, Chris. Nice talking to you.
Well, it's nice talking with you, too. Let's take a look at some of the things that have happened. Good things have happened in the city of Hammond lately. A lot of them are dealing with economic development. One in particular, in fact, it was, I guess, just this past weekend, where folks that maybe have driven by what's been called for a long time, the Sportsplex, now the Sports and Community Center, in the spot where Woodmark Shopping Center used to be, have had a chance to check the building out here. Give us an idea of what people have thought so far and what's going to happen now that the building is nearly completed, officially completed at least.
Well, we're having the ribbon cutting next week on it. It was about a week ago. We had over 600 people show up for, it was a community sneak peek at the complex. It's not completely done yet, but we want people to see what we're talking about. You know, it's hard to appreciate how big it is until you get in there and see what's going on. But there's two different sides to it. On the soccer side, we have two indoor soccer fields built side by side with bleachers. And, you know, we have planned to have a lot of leagues offered, you know, leagues for adults, leagues for kids, obviously, travel tournaments, stuff like that. On the basketball volleyball side, we have six indoor, full-size indoor basketball courts that can be easily converted over to 12 indoor volleyball courts. And on that side, we also plan to run leagues, but what we'll really see on that side is massive weekend tournaments, you know, tournaments that start on Friday, they go Saturday, and then on Sunday, they have the elimination brackets, you know, big time, you know, travel volleyball, big, you know, travel basketball tournaments. And quite frankly, we've already sold out the entire winter. The complex every weekend is sold out before it even ribbon cut through June. So including some very big name tournaments that we can't talk about at this point. But, I mean, our first year is sold out already. I imagine this is going to be a driver for that part of our city, which is the Woodmark section of Hammond. I think that we're going to see the kind of impact that the Woodmark Mall used to have, you know, because this is going to bring a lot of people into Hammond. And I'm very proud of it. And we actually had a lot of people that wanted to buy the naming rights to it. And we intentionally left the word Hammond in there because we want people to know, you know, when they're setting their tournaments up, they're going to Hammond. I think that's important.
One of the things, too, I think that at some point, I'm sure people lamented the demise of Woodmark Shopping Center because of what the shopping center in its glory years really, really represented to the city of Hammond. And when I know that that businesses started leaving, going elsewhere, and buildings started being taken down, and then was all of a sudden suddenly left only to the Carson Peary Scott store. And then now, of course, it's closed. What are we going to find here? We know it was taken on the life of its own now with the new facility. What things might be in the works for the rest of the what used to be the Woodmark Shopping Center?
Well, the Carson's is all that's left of the Woodmark Shopping Center. I imagine if I were a betting man, I would say within a year it'll be on the ground, and I hope within a year we have something going up in its place. Mm-hmm. But I'm not going to be impatient either, because this complex, this sports complex, is opening officially in a couple. You know, I think it's September 22nd, I want to say, or September 27th, like right around there. But once it opens up, I think people are going to see with their own eyes what kind of numbers this is generating, what kind of people it's bringing into our city. And entrepreneurs are going to start looking at the old Carson Peary Scott building and saying, you know, I could do way better than an old retail store at that location, especially with the Sportsplex right next door.
Oh, certainly.
I don't think it's a stretch to think that there could be a large hotel where the Carson Peary Scott stands. I don't think that's a stretch at all.
I know that there will be probably a big demand for parking with all these events that are going to be happening, not only sports events, but community events, since we mentioned at the outset of our conversation that it's really the Hammond Sports and Community Center. Although it's been called the Sportsplex all along, I think, just for having a name to the project, you're going to have to look for some more parking space, and I know that it's going to be pretty tight for a while, I would imagine.
Well, you know, that's where Carson's shutting down doesn't really hurt us. And the thing is, there's parking all around this building. It's one of the things land that was previously not being used, that was between basically just south of the Walmart, that land is being converted over to parking as well. And once Carson's comes down, there's going to be parking at that location as well. But yeah, we are very mindful of that, you know, and there's a neighborhood right to the south, and we don't want to impact that neighborhood. any more than, you know, we already are.
Now, we talked here about the former Sportsplex, as we mentioned, now the Sports and Community Center. They're in the Woodmar neighborhood. Going a little further to the south, we have another major project that is coming, I won't say to close, but certainly filling up fast, and that's the Oxbow Landing, which is just mm-hmm. south of 8094, right on the edge of Hammond and Highland. What's the latest, and what's in the works for that project?
Well, there's two pieces of property that we own that were purchased, and basically they converted those two large pieces of land into, it's going to be a commercial building that's a twin to the one that was already built. That the building that was built is already leased out. This second building is going to be leased out once it's built. It's a great location, and there's a lot of law firms and other large businesses that are taking advantage of the great location and the high visibility. So we expect to see that second commercial building look very similar to the first one that's built, just to the south of the first building. And then around the commercial building, there's four outlots where we expect to see more retail, like restaurant type of establishments.
Mm-hmm. Now, and then going to the north, north of the Woodmar neighborhood, of course, we have more development underway. We have Lear Corporation is putting in their new building. Bring us up to date on that project, and maybe also, too, I guess, what's going to happen to the current Lear building? They're not too far away from Woodmar.
Well, that's a great question. In fact, first off, Lear was previously located on 165th, just across the street from the Walmart, the old Woodmar Mall, that area.
Right.
They needed more space, and Hammond was lucky enough to be the winner of many communities that were seeking to have Lear build their new plant there. And what we got as a result was a $34 million plant. Lear has been a great corporate neighbor, and they've been great partners with us, and we're super excited to have, you know, basically all the employees that were located in Portage and in Hammond, Indiana, consolidated under one roof. So I think it's like 800 jobs that are going to be created there.
Wow.
So we're real excited. But once they leave, they're going to leave their old, you know, building on 165th. And I'm almost certain there's a buyer that's real close to closing the deal if they haven't closed already. And I don't want to get ahead of myself.
Well, right? But
I heard the name, but I can't reveal it publicly, but not worried.
No, you can't help but feel that somebody is interested in that property. There are so many other industrial properties along there. You've got Jupiter Steel, you've got Lear, you've got all the other businesses that are there along that particular stretch.
And Chris, this one's an Illinois company moving from Chicago into Hammond, which has been a common theme, you know, because of the problems that they're having in Illinois and the great situation we face here in Indiana with the low taxes. I mean, we are seeing a lot of companies from Chicago move into our city.
Yeah, I hear.
I'm happy about that.
Another question I had to ask about is, in fact, it kind of goes along in relationship to just that, that we've been hearing even commercials on radio stations, people concerned about the property taxes going up in Illinois and how much it's going to be. Of course, we already know that people have come from Illinois to live in Indiana, and now there are many cases coming to work in Indiana, too, if they happen to be coming over. But do you see the city of Hammond picking up more business and related development, residential maybe, or other commercial development because of what's happening across the state line?
We do see that. A lot of our, you know, and a lot of our home sales are to people come from the state of Illinois and move it into our city. It's going to be interesting to see our next census because I've personally, you know, we've a lot of people that used to live in some, you know, like River Park apartments. So we have done things to change our population, but I'd be shocked if Hammond wasn't 79,000 or greater. So I'm not worried about losing population. And as far as our businesses are concerned, it's been nothing but positive also. And that's a tip of the cap to Indianapolis for keeping us in a good financial situation, you know, and in Indiana. And it's just natural for people from Illinois. They're either looking to move north to Wisconsin or south and east to Indiana. So.
Yeah. That's good news to hear, certainly for us here on this side of the state line. We're talking with Hammond Mayor Tom McDermott Jr. about some of the things happening in the city of Hammond lately. We've talked about some great development with the Sports and Community Center about to officially open very soon. The Lear Corporation with their new facility that's coming up. It's going to bring more business and some other projects, of course, still staying in Hammond because it's so close to where their major source of their output is, but combining the Portage and the Hammond operations together. Are there any other projects in any other neighborhoods in Hammond that we should be aware of?
Well, you know, the data center project is much acclaimed. It was a result of my economic development team putting together a proposal to try to lure Amazon's HQ2 to Hammond, Indiana. We knew that that was an extreme long shot. It would be like hitting the lotto. But nonetheless, I forced my economic development department to put together a proposal and send it to Seattle. And we got a lot of attention from the press when we did that. And what happened was, as a result of the press attention, we linked up with a gentleman that grew up in the region but lives in Carmel, Indiana now. And he got together with a gentleman that he went to Andrean with, or he knew through Andrean connections, Matt Reardon, mm-hmm. who knew the city of Hammond's administration, and he knew a lot about the state line generating plant. And through all of our connections, we ended up talking to a gentleman from New York named Peter Feldman, who is an expert at building data centers. And after looking at our location in Hammond, he figured that it was one of the best locations you could build one of these data centers in the country for a number of reasons. The low tax environment, going back to what we were talking about earlier, easy access to cooling water with Lake Michigan there, reliable electric service, it doesn't get more reliable than that location, and great access to the internet for the same reason. The electrical is so great. The internet's right there also. It's literally the information superhighway passes right by that site. So for all those reasons, the former state line generating station is now is going to be the venue for a $40 million data center. And there's a very good chance that $40 million could grow into $100 or $200 million within a few years, because they expect this to be a huge development. We hosted CEOs from across the country that did this type of work. 250 data center technicians and CEOs came to an event in Hammond, Indiana just a few weeks ago, and there's a lot of excitement about this location.
I imagine probably the only competition, if you want to call it that, for the new facility that's going to go in there along the lakefront is the one that's already kind of up, because the building was already there. We're talking about over in Illinois, the data center that's in the former Sun-Times printing plant, which is there on the south side of town.
Isn't there in Fermac?
It's taken over and starting to getting operation there too. So we know that there's a little competition there, but there's always room for more, I suppose, especially in this area. Yeah.
But think about the data center at Cermak. The real estate costs are way higher. The taxes are way higher. The cooling water they need to cool down the data center is way more expensive because Chicago water is expensive. You come over here to Hammond, cooling water is plentiful. You got the same electric service and all that, low tax environment and cheaper land. I mean, where would you rather put it?
Well, there you have it. Yeah. we've kind of answered the questions there, haven't we?
Yeah.
We sure.
I keep on complimenting the state of Indiana. People are going to think I'm being too nice to the governor.
One other thing I'd like to bring up, if we can, Mayor, here, we've talked here about business industry, about economic development in particular. One other thing haven't mentioned lately is entertainment. We know a lot of people enjoy coming to Wolf Lake, to the complex there, because of the Festival of the Lakes every year. And I understand there's even it's going out to even to entertainment coming up, I guess, even this weekend, I understand.
Oh, yeah, we have entertainment a lot. A lot of the shows we do are free, but we do have two big shows coming up. I'm not sure if a lot of people in South County are aware that we have the Steve Miller Band playing at the Hammond location at the Pavilion at Wolf Lake on Saturday, September 22nd. I mean, Steve Miller Band, that's a Rock and Roll Hall of Fame band coming to Hammond, Indiana. So, and we are selling tickets for that event right now at wolflakepavilion.com. Ticket sales are going really well. This is a big event, and we're super excited about hosting it in Hammond, so I hope we have a real big crowd to see the Steve Miller Band. And the night before that, we have a rock concert with a singer called Gucci Mane, who played at Lollapalooza this year. He's playing the night before, and ticket sales are going really well for that show. But that show is geared towards a younger audience. I think a lot of your listeners' kids will know who Gucci Mane is. We expect that to be a big show with a totally different crowd than Saturday. Saturday is geared more towards a typical region, adult audience, you know.
That's right. That's right. There must be something that obviously promoters of these events seem to like when you've got an act like Steve Miller Band coming into Hammond, Indiana, of all places. Mm-hmm. And we're not talking about the facility at the casino. We're talking about Wolf Lake. There must be something about the amphitheater and about the area that appeals to these people.
Tell you what, when the weather's nice out there, and sometimes the weather is not nice, but when the weather's nice out there, it's hard to beat that location. It's like you're playing on an ocean. But, you know, we put it this way, during the Nas, we had a Nas concert, which is a big rap act, during last year's festival.
Yeah.
And the president of Live Nation's Midwest operations was out there watching us and watching the venue. There's 10,000 people there that day. I mean, it was packed. We had a big audience, you know, big act, and Live Nation's out there watching us. So we're doing something right, you know, and we're getting the attention of people that are, you know, paying attention, which is good. So I don't think it's a stretch 5 years from now that there's regular concerts going on at the Pavilion at Wolf Lake with big name acts, just like you see in Tinley Park, just like you see at the Ravinia. There's no reason to think that Hammond's Wolf Lake Pavilion can't be the same.
Well, Mayor McDermott, thanks for spending time to talk about what's happening in the city of Hammond these days, and hope to have you back again soon.
Thank you, Chris. Nice talking to you.
Nice talking with you. What was the last time that you spoke to a teller at your bank, or maybe you went to a travel agent to take care of some reservations for your vacation? How about going to the supermarket and being checked out by an actual person? Well, we do see the effects of automation all around us, and it doesn't matter whether it's in the service industries or manufacturing or the legal profession. We have a very small percentage of adults that are reporting losing hours to automation. But it is something to talk about and something that Indiana Humanities is bringing up in their next series of discussions called Chew on This. And, in fact, the series is going to come up on September 12th, and with us to talk about it, we have Leah Namias from Indiana Humanities. Leah, thanks for joining us on Regionally Speaking today.
I'm excited to talk to you. Thank you for having me.
Give us the idea behind creating the Chew on This conversation series.
So Indiana Humanities does a program called Chew on This, where we have basically dinner parties at different restaurants around the state at the same time, where we get people talking about an important question or big idea. So we believe that, you know, coming together with people you don't know over a meal is a great way to kind of have an open-ended, thought-provoking conversation, but to have a little fun and maybe hear some different points of view than you might normally. So that's why we do Chew on This. And this year, we're doing a whole bunch of different programming looking at the intersection of science, technology, and the humanities. And so we thought it would be really cool to look at this question of automation and how it's changing work and how it's changing our communities. We feel like that's a really important issue for a lot of Hoosiers. And we actually did a little poll to ask what topic people wanted to talk about next with this program, and this was the issue that they told us. So we're looking at this question, will machines replace us? You know, what is the future of work as it relates to automation and technology and how that's changing work?
Now, this very interesting one-night conversation series is going to happen on Wednesday, September 12th. And here in Northwest Indiana, it's going to be held at the 18th Street Brewery in Hammond. And to tell us how that brewery got chosen and the fellow who's going to kind of be the moderator, or so to say, at least he's going to help keep the program going.
Yeah, so we have a colleague who's from the area, and so we were brainstorming possible restaurants that would be both fun and game, as well as appealing good food and drink, and she suggested 18th Street Brewery, and so we were really excited to do this conversation in the region, and so we were really happy that when we reached out to 18th Street Brewery, they were like, sure, come on over. Mm-hmm. So we're excited about the venue, because one of the things that we know with this program is part of the appeal, in addition to the topic, is that you want to have a great meal, and you want to have a good time. So we know 18th Street Brewery will do that for us. We also are excited about the facilitator that we have that will be in Northwest Indiana. So his name is Max Grinnell, and he is he goes by the title of urbanologist. He's an expert on kind of cities and what makes them tick. And he did all of his work in Chicago, his kind of a lot of his research. So he's done a lot of work actually in Northwest Indiana. So he's pretty familiar with the history of the region. And he actually, during our last Chew on This event, we always have live tweeters at every location that help kind of capture the conversation and share it out with people who weren't at the event. And he was following along during our last Chew on This and just said, this is a really cool program, and I think it would be fun to be involved with this. And we were like, heck yeah. And I think this topic, frankly, you know, will machines replace us? How, as our jobs change, will that affect our communities? That's a great question to be thinking about for someone who's kind of thinks about cities all the time, right? Will cities look different? Will people live differently if they don't, you know, have to work downtown and drive back out to the suburbs, right? They can work from home, for instance, if automation makes that possible. What kinds of people will live in cities? How will cities deal with the fact that maybe a big factory is going to have fewer workers, but maybe there's a new kind of industry that will grow up in its place because of technology. So he's really excited about this conversation, and we're really excited to have him take part.
Now, we know that the entire state of Indiana's economy has changed over the years, of course, as the manufacturing and service sectors have done the flip-flop as to who's the dominant one in the mm-hmm. in the team. We also know, too, that Northwest Indiana has suffered especially hard on this because of the decline over the years of the steel industry in Northwest Indiana and other heavy industry in the region. And I'm sure it'll be interesting to see what people have to say and what they think about the fact that automation is kind of the next change here. We've gone from heavy industry to the service industry, and now we're going to see automation have something to say about this, so to speak.
Yeah, I think when people think about automation, you know, the image that comes to mind is what happens in factories, right? Kind of manufacturing. But a lot of the research that's being done on automation now, and there was a really good report that was done for Central Indiana by the New America Foundation, really finds that the jobs that are most at risk in the next wave are probably not the ones you're thinking about. They're jobs that women tend to hold. So things like cashiers, bank tellers, kind of those frontline, even fast food work, right? You know, you may have been to some of these new McDonald's that, you know, where you kind of pick your meal on a big touch screen and then someone brings it to you. Well, that used to be someone's job, right, to take your order. So these are things that are changing, and it might surprise us. Now, of course, we know that other kinds of jobs, this is the exciting thing about technology, there will be other kinds of jobs that come along, right? So lots of growth in the fields of software development, lots of interesting growth in kind of medical-related fields where medical services and technology intersect. So there's a lot of opportunity, and we're kind of excited to explore that question and hear what people have to say. You know, how has this impacted them, and what would they like to see? What kinds of investments can we be making now to make sure that we're resilient and able to kind of meet the challenge of the future?
Now, the next in the series of Chew on This conversations that Indiana Humanities is putting up is going to be on Wednesday, September 12th, and the questions asked, will machines replace us? Leah, tell us how people can sign up if they are interested in being part of the conversation, in this case here in Northwest Indiana at the 18th Street Brewery.
That's right. So they can visit our website, indianahumanities.org, and the first thing on the top of the page says, Chew on This, Will Machines Replace Us? So you just click there, and you can purchase a ticket. So tickets cost different amount in each, depending on where you are with your city, but they include your entire meal and a drink. So I think tickets at 18th Street Brewery are going to be $30, uh-huh. and they are developing a custom menu for us, which is pretty cool as well.
Oh, great.
So you can go online, you can reserve your ticket, and we'll see you on Wednesday, September 12th at 6:30.
Well, you also have a chance to be with Max Grinnell, who calls himself an urbanologist. He's an interesting fellow in his own right, and he's going to be a great facilitator for this particular conversation coming up here. Leah, thank you very much for being with us today, and we appreciate the information, and we hope if anybody's interested in taking part in the Northwest Indiana version of the Chew on This conversation coming up next month, that they do so right away.
Thank you so much, Chris.
Leah Nehemus is with the Indiana Humanities based in Indianapolis. Rise Northwest Indiana is a nonpartisan organization that works to empower local citizens to become strong advocates for the quality of life in Northwest Indiana. And two members of the group, Sarah Ferraro and a local high school student, Gabriella Hay, were here on Regionally Speaking not long ago to talk about Rise Northwest Indiana.
A lot of people asking questions of us because we had done a lot of things politically in Lake County, and they're like, how can I get engaged? What can I do? What can I, you know, how can I learn about this? How can I, all these different questions. So we decided to build a training hub of resources for people to kind of learn about not only political offices, but how they can get involved, what they can do in their community to make a difference. And we started under a different name. And since being funded by the Legacy and Knight Foundations, now we're called Rise Northwest Indiana. So it's been a whirlwind of events and people and trainings that have had 65 to 70 people at them. And
wow.
So, it's a lot of...
It's a lot of people to be involved in that.
A lot of energy. So... we've done trainings on running for office for things, as low as school board to all the way up to state representative. So, and now we're just looking at people getting engaged here in their community to what they can do locally at festivals, fairs, parades, anything, you name it. I invited Gabriella Hay to she was going to kind of observe, but I know she can tell us a little bit about what she's been doing locally. She's a young student leader who's been participating in our activities. And
so I've actually written a letter to the editor before, and tonight I'm helping Rise Out. They're holding a workshop to help people write letters to the editor, which is a good way of getting your voice out, letting people know what you think. So since I've written one before, and I'm younger, we're going to have some people, I guess, learn from me. And then kind of one of our main goals is to kind of say, like, hey, I'm 17 and I wrote one, and you guys should be able to, too. So, yeah, I'm just hoping to help them out, teach some people some new things. I'm really excited.
Was there anything in your experiences at Lake Central High School that got you interested, or at least to more closely examine this and led to your participation in Rise Northwest Indiana?
I guess the main thing is we don't really have very many like opportunities for civic engagement at the high school. So actually this year I started a civics club, and this will be our first year running, like actually doing activities. So the fact that we didn't have very many opportunities to like practice our civic engagement is one of the reasons that I obviously would need to go outside of the school to do it. And I don't enjoy that we don't have that many opportunities, so I kind of had to make them for myself.
Well, that's how these things get started, I suppose, this way, too. And you probably have taken great advantage of the opportunities of the training and all the sessions that you've been able to attend through Rise Northwest Indiana, which probably helps fill some of the gaps in your education on civics, hasn't it?
Yeah, it definitely has. Just seeing all the different ways people can contribute, because not everyone likes doing the same thing. You know, sometimes people are knocking doors trying to register people to vote, but not everyone likes that. So that's why it's good we have the letter to the editor workshop and things like that.
The group has affiliations or partnerships, I guess would be a better way to put it, with other organizations here in Northwest Indiana that you have helped to not only enhance but also probably augment some of the educational efforts. Tell us about how these other groups, who the other groups are and how they fit in.
So we, this past spring, built relationships and partnerships with IU Northwest, Purdue Northwest, and they're fully engaged and on board with our content and ready to do more in the fall. We kind of came at a time when the students were getting ready for, you know, to leave for the summer. So this coming fall, we're going to fully engage with them and do some things there. I'm excited about that. Also, the United Way has helped us to amplify our volunteer opportunities through resources that they have, and we're looking forward to working with them in the future. But I would say the most exciting one, and I know Chris has probably spoken with members of the League of Women Voters before, so
oh, yes.
The local chapter here in Lake County, the Calumet area, I'm also on the executive board, but they're just looking for more ways to amplify their group and how can their group grow, and this was a perfect partnership. So Rise is actually fully aligned with, because we are nonpartisan. We're part of a 501c3 through the Legacy Foundation, and that's the same alignment that the League has. So we're building a website that's going to host not only who's on your ballot, but hopefully some candidate surveys so we can learn more about candidates. And that's what the League does, kind of, you know, get to know who's on your ballot. And I know they'll have debates coming up this fall, so we're hoping to help them amplify things on social media and really, really get that out there. They're very excited about this partnership.
Do you think that being a nonpartisan organization, as opposed to being a Republican or a Democrat organization, helps or maybe even makes things more difficult to try to get the word out, to try to educate people about the importance of being civically engaged?
I'm just so passionate about what we're doing for Rise and here in Lake County, and especially all of Northwest Indiana. But I would say, that's been an interesting question for us is, you know, this is a difficult arena for people to understand the whole nonpartisan kind of genre that we're working in. But I feel it's a positive aspect because we can do so many more things in the community that and expose people to not only voter registration, but, you know, the League of Women Voters, amplifying them. So it's been difficult for the leadership of Rise to explain about how that works. But at the same time, it's helped people to know that we can all come together and all have these conversations and we can all learn together and grow together here in Lake County.
That's Sarah Ferraro and a local high school student, Gabriella Hay, who's attending school at Lake Central High School here in Lake County, as representatives of Rise Northwest Indiana. This is Regionally Speaking on Lakeshore Public Radio. This next story comes to you from the Welcome Project at Valparaiso University. The Welcome Project collects first-person stories and pairs these with intentional conversation to help forge stronger ties within and across our communities.
I grew up right here in Gary. I was born here in 1938. Gary used to be a bustling city. Downtown was nothing but shops, stores, and everything. Citywide was nice new homes and all that. You didn't have a lot of vacant, dilapidated houses that you have today. This is going back in the 40s, coming forward. It used to be a very nice place to live. It's still a nice place to live in pockets, in certain places. But you don't have the jobs that you have. You don't have the industry. You don't have the stores. You don't have all of that anymore like you used to. When I grew up as a youngster, there was only one integrated school here, and that was Frable. And the white students did not want us at Frable. They went out on strike for 2 months, but they finally relented, and we went to Frable. The only other school, high school, that we could go to was Roosevelt, and that was all black. And it wasn't until 1949 that they integrated Emerson. See, Gary was a very racist city. A lot of folks did not know that. Downtown, there's railroad tracks by the old Sears building. When the lights went out, you had to be on the south side of those tracks. You wouldn't be downtown. The Little Cal River on the south side out here, that was a dividing line between Gary and Glen Park. Now, Glen Park is a part of Gary, but that was a white area. We didn't live out there. We didn't even go out there. Passed through there, that was it. Crown Point, we live out there now, but at them days, we didn't live out there. The only time we went to Crown Point was when we went to court out there or we went to visit somebody in the county jail. We were channeled into our own little area. Same thing was in Chicago. They came up here from Mississippi. There was a big push to come up here to go to work in the mills. Blacks came. Come to find out, it was better down there than it was here because they channeled into the area on top of each other. Skokie, you didn't go into Skokie unless you went there to work. When night came, you better be out of there. But racism is inside people. Until you change inside, all the laws you can pass ain't gonna do a bit of good. A good example, 1974. They were busing the kids from Chicago out to the suburbs. Women out there in their house coats, curlers in their hair, spitting at the kids, throwing eggs upside the buses, because they didn't want the blacks in the school out there. Same thing was happening in Boston at the same time. Racism, it's a disease, I'll call it a disease, that people inherit. They're taught that by the adults around them. You can tell a child what to do. Don't do this or don't do that. But they're watching you and they're listening to you. That's how they're being taught. You got to start telling the child from the ground up how they're supposed to conduct themselves, how they're supposed to treat other people, how they're supposed to be treated. The only thing that I could say that I would change or try to change is the way people feel about each other. Color or your nationality shouldn't be a part of your life, nobody else's life. What do you have that you can give me? That's all what I need. And when I say that, I don't mean money-wise or material-wise, but what do you have educational-wise? There's some things that you know that I don't know. And I'm 80 years old. There's a lot I can tell you. But we have to, like I say, respect each other and take what you have and use it to build on. That's all I can tell you. I enjoyed talking to you. And I hope that some of the things that I may have said will become a part of your regiment.
You can find more regional stories at welcomeproject.valpo.edu. Police across Indiana seized more than $3 million worth of property and cash during fiscal year 2017 that they believe was involved in suspected crimes. Prosecutors and law enforcement agencies say civil forfeiture empowers those agencies to be able to take the fruits of crime and use some of the proceeds for further investigations. But as Indiana Public Broadcasting's Barbara Brozier tells us in part two of our series on civil forfeiture, that critics say that where the proceeds are going are creating conflicts of interest these days, and they may even be violating the Indiana state constitution.
During the fall of 2011 in Muncie, first responders were overwhelmed.
We were having multiple overdoses. The EMTs and the first responders were averaging about two a day.
That's Delaware County Prosecutor Jeff Arnold. He says people were overdosing on bath salts and spice. It was part of a large drug ring involving several convenience stores in Delaware County. So Arnold says several police agencies started an undercover operation that lasted nearly 9 months.
A large group of law enforcement agencies came together to serve warrants on those simultaneously. We froze bank accounts simultaneously, so because we knew there would be telephone calls really fast. And it was a good deal of money.
In addition to filing criminal charges against those involved, the county started a civil forfeiture case in an attempt to keep cash, property, and cars seized during the investigation. While the court ordered some of that be returned to the defendants, it also said tens of thousands of dollars should be forfeited. The money was divided between Muncie Police, the sheriff's office, the private law firm hired to prosecute the case, and the prosecutor's office. During a legislative study committee last year, Arnold said he used the money from that case to make audiovisual improvements in several circuit courtrooms.
Ever since that day, it's been very satisfying to me to go into court when I do major felonies and remember that that equipment and those drop-downs came from someone who was selling drugs and killing people on our streets.
But some state legislators argue the way Indiana allows the funds to be dispersed creates a major conflict of interest. Democratic Representative Matt Pierce says it leads people to question the motivation behind seizures.
We have to separate where the money goes from the people actually doing the seizing of the property. Because I think it breeds cynicism amongst the public when they see that prosecutors and law enforcement directly profit from the assets that are seized.
And there are questions about whether the practice violates the state's constitution, which says money from all forfeitures should go to the common school fund. Several Marion County residents are suing the prosecutor, police, and mayor, arguing the county's ignored that statute for years and instead distributed all proceeds to local law enforcement efforts. Data from the Indiana Prosecuting Attorneys Council shows police seized nearly $3.4 million worth of cash and property statewide during fiscal year 2017, but less than 2% of that went to the Common School Fund. It's something the Indiana Supreme Court will consider when it hears the lawsuit. But Republican State Senator Roderick Bray says legislators already addressed some of the problems with Indiana's civil forfeiture laws through Senate Bill 99, which passed earlier this year.
We went round and round about how that might be changed and how it might serve our state a little bit better. And we came up with what I think was a pretty good product.
Among other things, the new law is more specific about how proceeds from seizures should be distributed. Before, the law allowed police and prosecutors to use that money to reimburse agencies for their investigations. But law enforcement said it was too hard to determine how much was spent, and in many cases, took all of the money. Now the money first goes to pay attorney's fees if an outside law firm is hired to prosecute the case. Most of the remaining money goes to police and prosecutors, except for the 15% distributed to the Common School Fund.
But the one piece that then is in front of the Indiana Supreme Court is deciding whether or not that is legal. Obviously, if the Supreme Court has an opinion that it's not proper, then we'll go back to the drawing board.
Back in Delaware County, Arnold is hoping that won't happen. He says civil forfeiture funds help keep his office running.
I've got a couple people on staff as a result of being able to continually have funds in the forfeiture budget line.
He's hopeful changes already made to Indiana's civil forfeiture rules will allow him to keep that budget line going. For Indiana Public Broadcasting, I'm Barbara Brozier.
That's it for Regionally Speaking for today. I'm Chris Nolte. Thanks for joining us, and we'll be back with you tomorrow.